Right, good morning, everyone. Some of you by now have noticed that I was limping. I'll tell you the story some other time, but it hurts. I started to bring a stool up here and say, maybe I'll just sit. And I said, no, I'm going to tough it out. And my wife is like, you're going to learn one day. I tried to tell you. That's how I got hurt anyway, not listening to her. But again, another story for another time. We've been talking about having the courage of your convictions, and one of the things that there's been several things that happened in preparing this particular part of the series. One of them is I was reflecting on my own family, and some of this I'll share as we go forward. But the other thing about my immediate family, meaning my wife and my kids, is so funny is this morning as I was kind of putting some little changes in there, I was thinking how I have such a scary family. Like, they're just not the bravest people, right? And we were walking and went to go see Miss Shanita, and we had to go drop something off. And as we're walking down the hallway, one of her neighbors clearly wasn't thinking about the children. She clearly wasn't anticipating children because she put this picture up. It's one of those kind of pictures where it will change as you look at it from a different angle, right? And there's this picture a couple doors down. Tell her I said it. It upset my son, right? Now, Kendall, she's fearless like me. My son, he's like, no, he's his mother's child. And he goes by the picture and he sees it. And he's looking. He's like, oh, look at the nice lady. Well, as you keep walking, it changes. And then it's like this bloody scary, you know. She was clearly doing this for Halloween, for effect. So as we leave Miss Shanita's, I'm looking and I'm noticing, typically they race to get down the hallway and push the button. Who's going to push down, right? Not this time. He was like, Kendall, you can have it. My son, he goes, and he kind of gets to the door, and he's looking at each door like, that's not the one. That's not the one. Then he gets to the one, and he kind of does like this, and he walks on by. And, you know, I was thinking how sometimes we can be like that when it comes to our relationship with God. We can forget that, you know, it's just a picture, you know. It's not real. It's not something that we should be afraid of. And furthermore, it's like, son, I'm right here. You're okay. But sometimes we can still kind of, okay, I know it's not real, but I really still don't want to look at it. I still kind of don't want to deal with it, you know. And so I want to look at the effects of allowing fear to change your life. What it means to allow fear to overcome you instead of being faithful. The title of the sermon today is, and do it anyway. You know, that's the second part of that statement where they say, feel the fear and do it anyway. Because when you don't overcome and deal with that fear, when you're not bold and courageous, there are in fact consequences to living by fear instead of living by faith. You know, last week we talked about cognitive dissonance and how sometimes in our mind we have to wrestle and reason with certain things and we make excuses for things. And, you know, in fact, we make excuses for why it is that we're not willing to be brave. You know, I was thinking that this is the perfect topic for this month because as we're getting into October, it's coming up on Halloween and everybody, you know, around us, you know, of course, nowadays, it's July and they're already putting up Halloween stuff in the stores. But the point is, right about now, you're seeing pumpkins and jack-o'-lanterns and people are getting their costumes together. They're promoting all the new movies. This is Jamie Lee Curtis because they've got a new Halloween that's coming out, right? And, you know, they have like certain networks on television. They're doing 31 days of Halloween. And you think, well, I won't even get into how I feel like that's just kind of disturbing how people celebrate this kind of stuff. But the point is that this is what we do. This is what people in our society do in October. They deal with fear, and, you know, this is probably the one thing that I always look forward to pretty much any time of year is I've always loved Michael Jackson's Thriller. But when you think about what it is that makes people so afraid, what it is that strikes fear. Why is it some people can go to a movie and see a gory flick and it doesn't bother them at all? And other people, they can't sleep. They just can't rest, right? I want to look at you know, even this guy, like, he kind of gets a bad rap, right? You know, like, you don't want him to cross your path. People get superstitious, you know. There are so many things that we're afraid of. And I put up this black cap because you think about it, it's like, oh, well, you know, I'm not superstitious, but I really don't want him crossing my path. Well, then you're probably superstitious, right? You know, and sometimes we'll say that, no, I'm fully entrenched in my faith in God, but I'm still afraid of what man can do. You know, going back to that cognitive dissonance, how do we reconcile the two? How can you in one breath say that I'm not superstitious, but I really don't want this, you know, don't break that mirror, or, you know, how is it that you can say that I'm fully faithful and believing in the God who loves me and who I serve, but yet I still allow myself and my life and the decisions I make and the things I do to be dictated by my fears? I want to start looking at some people who have some problems with courage in Exodus chapter 13. Starting in 17, it says, when Pharaoh let the people go, God did not let them on the road, did not lead them, excuse me, on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. For God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around the desert road towards the Red Sea. The Israelites went up out of Egypt ready for battle. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him because Joseph had made the Israelites swear an oath. He had said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up with you from this place. After leaving Succoth, they camped at Etham on the edge of the desert. By day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night, in a pillar of fire to give them light so that they could travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. We see a couple of things here that really stand out about God's attitude towards us, God's attitude towards his people. The fact that God was not only understanding that they were afraid, understanding that they, in fact, had, you know, they're kind of like my family, right? We're a little bit scary. And we're not always ready to jump out there. And yet, he did several things. He said, first of all, I know how you are, and I know that if you immediately have to face something difficult where you got to fight somebody, you might turn around and go back to that which you know is bad. You might go back to bondage. So I'm not even going to leave it up to you. I'm going to have you go the long way around. You know, sometimes God sends us the long way around in our walk with him. He sends us on the long road, even though there's a shorter path. We're thinking, well, why didn't we go this way? It's faster. It's because God knows what's ahead. He's trying to protect you. He's trying to keep you. But also, he says that there's this pillar of cloud and this pillar of fire. Right? You got this guide, this cloud by day, this fire by night, so that way you'll always be able to identify it and see it. You know, a lot of times we have to be reminded that our courage comes from not all of these, you know, weapons that we have or resources that we have or the power and might or the money or the things that we have, but knowing who it is that's leading us. Knowing that it is God who has set forth the path gives us courage, knowing that we can move forward. Knowing that we have nothing to be afraid of, because even when you get afraid, you look up and you see that cloud. You look up, you see that fire, and you know that God is in front of you, that he is forging the path for you. We have to be reminded of that. Otherwise, as he said, we can get afraid if we got to face a battle. We can get afraid when we get through those tough times, and we might go back. We might actually turn around and go the other direction and go from the place that we left. You know, I was thinking of my children when I think of courage and how, you know, a lot of times we did this. I was looking through some pictures. We did this a couple years ago. We went to Kings Island. It's an amusement park. We got on the roller coasters. And William was brave, but it was work. Like, you could see on his face. It was like, this is a big roller coaster, right? Kendall was totally oblivious. She was just like, hey, you know, you're here. You seem to be okay with it. She was actually even upset because she wasn't tall enough to get on some of the big rides. And so she's kind of like, but I can't wait until I'm tall enough. I want to sit with you. And I'm like, you don't have a choice. You're not going to sit with mommy. Why? Because mommy's not getting on the roller coaster, right? See, but the kids a lot of times get this bravery because they know who's leading them. They know whose hand that they're holding. They know that they're riding on mommy and daddy's shoulders. And so I was thinking back to when I was my daughter and my son's age, and I was thinking, how many times was I actually afraid of something? And I was so grateful because I was thinking of how much stability, for all the flaws and all the problems that you can point at, there was so much stability in the sense that there was rarely a time when I actually went to bed, went to sleep, and was afraid. Because in my mind, I always knew that my father was in the other room. He's right there. Kendall does this thing now where she's like, Daddy, can you sleep? Well, you have to know how the house is set up, but she's like, can you just sleep in the office tonight? And I'm thinking, Kendall, no, my back hurts. I'm not sleeping in this recliner. I'm not sleeping in this chair. I'm not sleeping sitting up because you don't want to sleep in your bed. But that's kind of the thing. I say that, and then, surely enough, Sharice gets up to, you know, go to the bathroom or something. She looks in the office, and she used to say, you're coming to bed. Now she's like, no, I ain't going to even wake him up. Because I'm just in there because I want to be there for my children. I want them to know that I'm there for them. And God wants us to know the same thing. I want to look at Exodus chapter 14, starting in verse 1 through 4, and then we'll skip down in inches of time and look at verse 10 through 14. Starting in verse 1 there, it says, then the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. There to encamp by the sea, directly opposite Baal Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites did this. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone? Let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Moses answered the people, do not be afraid, stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. You know, we see this narrative here again. These are people who struggled in their confidence, struggled in their bravery, struggled in their ability to see God. And you think, well, what does he have to do exactly? Okay, let's rewind a little bit. You know, they got locusts and frogs, and they're killing all these people's firstborn sons, and you've got all these plagues that are ravaging Egypt. And then he's got this pillar of fire and this pillar of cloud, all these different things that God is showing you to prove that you can trust him, that you have nothing to be afraid of. And yet, God's instinct about them was right. They're like, well, you know what? We told you to leave us alone anyway. I knew I should have just stayed in Egypt. They were afraid. And oftentimes we forget, even, and I love the part where it says how that, you know, I want you to go here and do this and do that, because that way Pharaoh will look at them and think, oh, they must be lost. Oh, they're just wandering around the desert. See, sometimes even the things that don't make sense to us, we want things now, and God's like, no, wait a few weeks. You know, we want to do things one way, and another person wants to go another, and you're thinking, well, why are we doing this? This seems so foolish. This doesn't make sense. But it's God's protection. And oftentimes, the direction that God gives us doesn't always reflect what is what's on our mind and doesn't always make sense to us, but his way always proves to be right. His way always proves to be effective. There are times when we question, am I making the right decision by trusting God, or should I just do what I want to do? Do what is instinct. Do what everybody else is doing. Be like everybody else. And we have to really sit down and ask ourselves, do we have faith in the one true living God if we're not willing to be bold and courageous? If we're not willing to follow him and do what he asked us to do? I was thinking of this. I took a class. Now, true story, I tried out for the swimming team my freshman year in high school. Didn't work out so well. Wasn't because I was a bad swimmer. It just, I didn't realize how much swimmers actually do, like, to prepare and practice. Like, they practice in the morning, practice in the afternoon, and I was just like, this is too much. But I remember when I was in school, I had to take an elective in college, and at this point, I was like, I just need to get this over with. So I took swimming as my PE elective. And again, it was a bad choice. I didn't learn anything from high school because I took this class, and one of the things that I had to deal with in my mind was this, what you're looking at right here, the diving board. Now, I wasn't afraid to jump in the pool. I wasn't even afraid to jump in head first. But I remember in order to pass the class, I had to jump off the high diving board. And I was like, feel free, go ahead of me, right? You know, it's like, it's your turn, you know? Age before beauty or something. I didn't know what to do because I really did not want to jump off the high diving board. Now, part of that was because I jumped off a diving board before. I may have shared this story about how when I was 5 years old, I was at the YMCA. Jump off the diving board, even though my mom told me get away from there. And really, I didn't jump off. I got pushed. But the point was that I couldn't make my way back to the top of the water after getting pushed into the pool. And so I blacked out because I had taken in too much water. I had lost consciousness. And the next thing I remember, after what seemed to be a few seconds, which actually ended up being it was a minute or two, was coughing and gagging and choking because the lifeguard had pulled me out of the water and gotten the water out of my system. And, you know, I remember leading up to this final, it's amazing to think a final exam where you swim and you jump off a diving board, but I remember leading up to this, I remember walking across campus to where the pool was at Tennessee State, and as I'm walking, I'm contemplating, I'm saying, well, it's just water. It's not going to hurt you. I mean, I've seen it many times in Olympics. They dive and they, you know, but no matter how I fixed it in my mind, I was still very afraid. You know, sometimes in our walk with God, there are things that we know they're not going to hurt us. We know it's water. You know, this isn't Bugs Bunny. It's not going to turn into ice when we magically land down there. We know this. But yet we're still afraid to jump on in, even though God says the water is fine. We find this here in Numbers chapter 13, if you'll go there, starting in verse 26. He says, they came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went to the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there, the Amalekites, live in the Negev, the Hittites, the Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they have explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them." You know, you think about what it is, what does it mean that these people came back and they spread a bad report? They allowed fear to dictate their life. God was giving them something. God was instructing them, "This is yours. This is what I expect from you. This is what I have prepared for you. It's just for you to go possess it." But they allowed the fear, and frankly, the fear of the past, as he's going through all these different names and, you know, the descendants of Anak and the Jebusites and all these different people, what they're saying is, these people are stronger than us. See, they're looking to the outside. They're looking at all the obstacles, and they're thinking, these obstacles are bigger than us. In fact, the obstacles are. They were, in fact, bigger than them. But they lost sight of the fact that God was bigger than the obstacles. They lost sight of the fact that he wasn't telling them to do something and then he was going to abandon them and leave them. He wasn't saying go do something to sabotage them. He was telling them to go do something, but the ones without faith, the ones who didn't believe and have faith in God, spread a bad report. They discouraged others. It wasn't as though they kept it to themselves. They said, "No, we shouldn't do this because I'm afraid. We shouldn't do this because I lack faith." And they gave all the negative reasons why they shouldn't go. See, ultimately, our lack of courage is a lack of faith. It's a reflection of where our faith truly is. Do you truly believe in this God that has delivered time and time and time and time again, all throughout history, even in your own personal life? Or are you focused on the obstacle because it's bigger than you? See, again, the obstacle, in fact, probably is bigger than you. Many of the things that we're afraid of, we have very good reason to be afraid. You probably should be afraid. But do you allow that fear to overcome you, or do you have faith that God is going to be there for you? This is a picture of me and my sister we took a couple years ago at the airport. There's very few of these in circulation of me and my sister. My sister, she kind of had that thing where I was icky for a while. All three of my sisters kind of thought I was icky for a while. But, you know, it was interesting. I'm less icky now because they have, you know, niece and nephew. So they tolerate it, right? And it was interesting because as I woke up this morning, she sent me a text to, you know, telling me something, but I happened to look online and she posted this thing on Facebook. I'm going to read this. She says, last evening I went to spend time with my father at his man cave. He was a gracious host, offering me drinks and snacks from his stash of treats. After about an hour, we both fell asleep while watching a movie, which is our norm, and it definitely is the norm. When I woke up this morning at about 4:15 a.m., my mind was already busy with worry and hurt from the days before. After a few minutes of torment, I decided to head home to pray and clear my mind. As I gathered my things, my father awakened and said, "Hold up. You can't walk out there at night by yourself." He mentioned something about getting breakfast at White Castle and got his car keys. So as I'm driving home, I continue to see his headlights in my rearview mirror. I called him and asked, "Where is there a White Castle near here?" He replied, "I'm not going to White Castle. I'm following you home. I got to make sure you get in the house okay." Really? My 70-year-old father not only got out of bed to make sure that I got to my car unharmed, he took the time to escort me to my house at 4:30 in the morning. He even showed me a new shortcut home. I share this not just because I'm grateful and I know I am loved, but to also highlight the characteristics of a great man. Ladies, find yourself a man who will escort you home. We think about who the God is that we serve. And it's reflected oftentimes in little experiences that we have with one another, with family, as in the case of my sister. And so often, when we aren't able to move forward in courage and not have the faith, it's because we've forgotten, we just don't believe that God is going to protect us. And oftentimes, what happens is we fail to realize that there are consequences for this. The last verse we're going to look at here is in Numbers chapter 14. We're going to read through the whole thing here, the rest of this, and starting in verse 17. Because there are consequences when you don't have faith. Sometimes people think, "Oh, well, you don't believe. Well, it's no big deal." No, there are consequences when you do not believe and act accordingly. Starting in verse 17, he says, "Now may the Lord's strength be displayed, just as you have declared. The Lord is slow to anger, abounding in love, and forgiving sin and rebellion. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation. In accordance with your great love, forgive the sin of these people, just as you have pardoned them from the time they left Egypt until now." See, Moses is trying to intercede. He's saying, "But these people, I know that they're faithless. I know that they're not believing. I know that they doubt you. But please have mercy on us. Don't punish us for this." He's trying to intercede on behalf of those people who came back and not only were faithless, but tried to spread that faithlessness, that doubt amongst everyone else. Continuing, it says, "The Lord replied, I have forgiven them as you asked. Nevertheless, as surely as I live and as surely as the glory of the Lord fills the whole earth, not one of those who saw my glory and the signs I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, but who disobeyed me and tested me 10 times, not one of them will ever see the land I promised on oath to their ancestors. No one who has treated me with contempt will ever see it. But because my servant Caleb has a different spirit and follows me wholeheartedly, I will bring him into the land he went to, and his descendants will inherit it. Since the Amalekites and the Canaanites are living in the valleys, turn back tomorrow and set out toward the desert along the route to the Red Sea." The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "How long will this wicked community grumble against me? I have heard the complaints of these grumbling Israelites. So tell them, as surely as I live, declares the Lord, I will do to you everything I heard you say. In the wilderness, your bodies will fall. Every one of you, 20 years old or more, who was counted in the census and who has grumbled against me, not one of you will enter the land I swore with uplifted hand to make your home, except Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joseph, son of Nun. As for your children that you said would be taken as plunder, I will bring them in to enjoy the land you have rejected. But as for you, your bodies will fall in the wilderness. Your children will be shepherds here for 40 years, suffering for your unfaithfulness until the last of your bodies lies in the wilderness. For 40 years, 1 year for each of the 40 days you explored the land, you will suffer for your sins and know what it is like to have me against you. I, the Lord, have spoken, and I will surely do these things to the whole wicked community which is banded together against me. They will meet their end in this wilderness. Here they will die. So the men Moses had sent to explore the land, who returned and made the whole community grumble against him by spreading a bad report about it. These men who were responsible for spreading the bad report about the land were struck down and died of a plague before the Lord. Of the men who went to explore the land, only Joshua son of Nun and Caleb son of Jephunneh survived. We see here that there are very real consequences for being unwilling to be faithful, for being unwilling to have the courage. Because, see, sometimes we can look at our life and think, well, yeah, I didn't have faith that God could use me to help this person see Christ. But I really just didn't want to talk about it. I really just didn't want to get out of my comfort zone. I'm just going to just pray for them, and I'm not really going to do anything because I'm not bold. I'm not courageous. I'm not willing to be faithful. And what we see is that just like them, we have consequences too. Because that initial feeling of fear may be reasonable, it's understandable to be afraid. But being faithless is what keeps us from doing the right thing. It's what keeps us from going out and realizing these people, God gave them a mandate. He gave them instructions that were foolproof. He had already proven who he was. And yet they were still fearful and they allowed themselves to live by fear. When we live by fear, God's not going to stop moving. He's not going to stop moving forward. He's not going to stop people from hearing the gospel, but he's just not going to use you. And maybe you might think, well, you know what? I'm fine with that. That should scare you. It should scare you that you're not convicted about being faithful and being bold and doing what it is that God asked you to do. It should scare you that you think that we're to be those who preach and teach and share the gospel with the lost and those who don't know him, but you don't out of fear, and you haven't out of fear. It should actually scare you more that you have not been living a life full of courage when you already know what God has done. Because we can look at these people and think, well, you know, that was them. But what about now? What are you doing in your life that indicates that you have faith in God and that you're not allowing your fear to cripple you, to hold you back from doing his will? A few questions we'll ask before we close here. Do I live daily as one who sees how big my issues and obstacles are, or do I focus on how big my God is? Because when we understand how big God is, when we understand just how important God is to us, that God gives us a personal escort in everything that we're doing, when we understand that God is there, suddenly the issues and obstacles, no matter how big they are, we know that they can't be bigger than God. How many plans has God had for my life that I was afraid, too afraid to simply pursue? What do I need to do to avoid the same mistake? See, what happens with, and you notice there where he talked about how 10 times, it wasn't as though it was just one time and they were a little bit fearful. This was a habit. This was a condition that they had allowed themselves to be content with. It wasn't just one time or twice. This went on and on and on. What do we need to do? What do you need to do to change your level of faith in the deeds that come with it so that it doesn't become a habit, so that it doesn't become a lifestyle or a culture, and so that it doesn't prevent you from seeing God? Not just seeing God in your personal life, not seeing him for eternity because you lack faith. Am I willing to pursue God's plan for my life in spite of those around me that give a bad report? Which spies do I need to allow to or limit access to my life and my thoughts? You know, there's a proverb, I believe it says, bad company corrupts good character, right? And you realize that, you know, even though all these people were a part of, they were together, they were one, you had those who were tearing down what God's plans were? Who do you need to get rid of so that you don't become faithless like them? Who do you need to stop talking to and listen to? What do you need to stop allowing in your presence so that you don't become increasingly less and less faithful? And finally, in what way will I be an example of faith this week? Even if it isn't seen now, do I have the courage to be a light in the dark? Do you have the courage to be the light in the dark? Because that's really what God is expecting us to do, is be the light in the dark. You know, he's expecting us to be Caleb. Even though we're outnumbered, even though everybody around us is pessimistic and negative and we're seeing the obstacles, he's expecting you to be faithful. In what way, moving forward, today, tomorrow, this week, next week, how are you going to be that light in the dark? How are you going to show the faithfulness that is required of God's people? So often we don't realize who we're impacting, whose life is being changed by our act of faith. You know, interestingly, I think about how, you know, as my sister was remarking about my dad, you know, my dad got baptized today in 1984, October the 7th. And sure, he was making a decision and a commitment for himself, and he was giving his life to God for himself. But the impact that it had on those future generations, on his children, on some of his neighbors and coworkers and friends and others that he brought to Christ, there's no way he could have measured that. And in the same way, there's no way that we can right now, today, measure what our willingness to be bold and courageous, how it will have an impact on someone else. We can't measure it because we can't possibly know. Caleb wasn't doing something. You know, Joshua, they weren't doing something to be courageous and leave an impact. They were just living by faith. They were living according to God. We have to do that as well, knowing that there's an impact to be had, knowing that someone's life is going to change because you're willing to be humble and be obedient and be courageous, and be faithful. Have you ever given your life to God? Are you in a place or a position now where you're saying, I've never truly decided I'm going to follow God? I don't even know maybe what that is. If that's where you are today, come forward as we sing our song of invitation. Make sure that you take this opportunity to not walk away from here, Not leave here thinking, well, you know what? It's okay that I hide behind my lack of courage and my lack of faith. But really, be willing to let us help you so that you can find out what it really means to be his follower. Would you please stand as we sing our song?